Blog Talk Radio.
Here we go.
Dream.
I think they get the picture.
Good evening and welcome to Eerie House, Only Tiny Radio, number 325, I believe. And maybe 682 overall, if I'm not mistaken. Of Eerie House Radio, I'm Dale Kay from Spook Show. And I'm here with...
Dave Binkley from We're in This Really Bad Movie and Spaceship One. And we're here along with...
You know, I never say it, but I guess I should. From Horrible Horror, starring God of the Goal. It is I, God of the Goal, blah, blah. I've never really...
No, you never have introduced yourself. You never have.
You have not like that. Wow. Wow.
Gar, you should know by now that we are all for shameless self-promotion. Go for it.
Right.
We encourage it from our guests. We encourage it from each other.
I was going to introduce myself as, he's everywhere, he's everywhere. It is I, Gar the Goal. But instead, I was like listening to you guys, and I was like, you know, maybe I could mention. It was all a bad dream.
It was all a bad dream.
It was all a bad dream.
It's all a bad dream.
And the number 27.
Fogsbane joins in the fray there in the chat. Live with us. Fogsbane. I'm from Brooklyn.
Fogsbane?
The Bronx.
Hello, Fogsbane. Fogsbane.
Watch it, he'll get your laser printer, his laser printer out after you.
Yeah.
I know.
Boing a hole in my head. There you go.
Ah, yes.
You can't have that.
It was all a bad foggy dream.
That guy's got some serious software and hardware.
Turn
that into a laser and that's it for us, man.
Yeah, he's the new Dr. No. He could be the new Dr. No.
Nah, he's a good guy. He's one of the good guys.
Well, maybe he's the new Dr. Yes. How's that?
Okay. Could be.
Fair enough.
It is Dr. Yes.
I would go that direction.
Sure.
I would go that direction. Yeah.
Dr. Yes would
be a bad guy on Get Smart. Dr. Yes.
Stories about dreams. That's what we got for you tonight. Three of them.
Three. Right. Yeah.
We got on the light side. We got Judy Canova.
Mel Blanc and the guy that was Philip Marlowe on radio. What was his name?
Ernest Borgnine. Yeah, that guy.
And even had Joseph Kern, one of the original Men in Black for Suspense. And I had it all right here. Where did it go? It's not here.
That's all right. We could bring that up later when we play it. We've also got The Shadow. And before we started, we were chatting a bit about another show, Alien Worlds, which we did not have the good fortune to have here in the Cleveland, Ohio area.
Yeah. Even though it did air on 500 stations across the country, but yet we didn't have a single... solitary station in Cleveland that aired it.
Darn them. Well, that's all right. We'll make up for lost time if you're from our area. Or if you just enjoy these tales we've been bringing you week after week after week after week after week.
Oh, okay. There it is.
We're just warming up. We're not tired.
I thought it was written by Arthur C. Clarke, but it's not. There's a nod to Arthur C. Clarke in it. And that they call the vehicle Starlab.
Inspired by a guy who saw a picture of Arthur C. Clarke.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. Got it created. It was somebody I don't know by the name of Lee Hansen. I have no idea who that guy is. But he probably has a photograph.
He was a radio personality on the West Coast, I believe.
And he has a photograph of Arthur C. Clarke on his desk. Yeah, that's the guy.
Well, as one would expect.
Yeah, Dale's got a picture of Dagwood Bumstead on his desk.
That's right.
Yeah.
It's inspirational. It's what I have always aspired to be. Dagwood Bumstead. Bumble through life and good things still happen. And you got a nice wife, good-looking wife.
Good-looking wife, yeah.
Pretty good kids, you know.
Yeah.
There you go. That's
not a bad life. Hey, he was employed during the Depression.
Yeah.
Dagwood didn't have
and a dog that half listens. Yeah, there you go.
If you think about it, Dagwood had it pretty good. He was mostly employed during the Depression. As an architect, I believe, was he not?
Something like that.
In the radio. Go ahead.
No, I just, he started off in the comic strips. It was almost like I would say a serial more than a comic like it is today, where he was actually from a very wealthy family, and his family disowned him and threw him out to the street with no money or anything.
Because of this
flapper blondie he was marrying.
Oh.
Dave, Blondie was a definite flapper.
When you were describing this, I kept thinking in my head, clapper. No, that's not right. Clapper.
No,
flapper.
Flapper.
Yeah, I know. I was like, she was a clapper. No, she wasn't a clapper. She was a flapper. That's it. Yeah.
Well,
yeah, but you can get medication.
That was before
that.
They invented the bra, wasn't it? Never mind. Okay, so
it should have been. That was a flip flopper.
Speaking of dreams,
I don't know.
Speaking of dreams, good thing CW is not here to kick my butt.
Whippity floppity.
And I deserve it. You guys ever have any notable weird dreams that come to mind? That you've had?
I had one about alien abduction that like terrified me as a teen. I don't know what that was about.
Did it involve probing at all?
No. Again, referencing what we were talking about certain celebrities. No, I that was not on my radar. It was just the threat of being powerless against something and it had control. I had two really bad UFO dreams that would come back and haunt me all throughout my teens. I don't know what the heck that was about.
Maybe it was real.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe.
It's buried in your subconscious there.
Yeah.
Later in the show, we're going to hypnotize Gar and see what happens.
And Gar will be known to say, God will be known to say, it was all a bad dream. Yeah.
Yes.
Go back. He said, go back to your childhood. And you go, back.
That one.
And when he comes to, he'll be guzzling coffee.
Not that far back.
Yes, it was all a bad dream.
Yes, it was.
Yeah,
exactly.
Was.
There you go.
Well, we had good dreams for you tonight. Three of them.
Yes.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's on here. Let's look.
Shall we start on the lighter side of life?
Yeah, let's start. Yeah, we need to start on the lighter side. We played a few clips from Judy Canova and her appearances on Command Performance, but we've never played one of her whole shows, and I got a kick out of listening to this whole show. What about you, Gar? I thought it was pretty funny.
I'll agree. I can't sign in. Heck.
It has an intriguing title. It's called The Dream Pills. Originally broadcast way back.
Robert Gilbert in The Dream Pills, January 31, 1948. That one. Yeah.
Sure. From Hollywood, The Judy Canova Show. Brought to you each week by the Colgate Palm Olive Peach Company, makers of Halo Shampoo to glorify your hair.
What?
And the new 1948 Super Suds with extra suds for extra whiteness. The Judy Canova Show with Mel Blanc, Ruby Dandridge, Joe Kearns, Ruth Parrott, Gerald Moore, The Sportsman, Charles Dant and his orchestra, and starring Judy Canova.
Love is so terrific, such a funny feeling, makes you want to cuddle and cling. Makes you sentimental, makes you kind of gentle. I'll terrific thing. Love is so prolific, sends your head a reeling, makes you want to giggle and sing. Makes you sigh and wonder, hits you just like thunder. Ouch, terrific thing. Life rearranges, suddenly changes, everything strange as it can be. Memory gets hazy, then you go crazy. Wow, look what it's done to me. Love is so terrific, such a dizzy feeling, makes you hold the world on a string. Melts away your collar, makes you want to holler, let the wedding bells ring. Oh, terrific thing.
Well, Judy is rapidly becoming convinced that Humphrey Cooper, the handsome movie actor, is her dream man. So she has subscribed to a fan magazine that is running a series of articles about him. Here comes the postman with the latest installment right now.
Howdy, Mr. Mailman.
Morning, Miss Canova. I got your magazine for you.
Oh, golly, thanks.
Oh, I see you like them movie magazines. But you know, honey, I go more for books. I'm reading one right now by... I said I'm reading one right now by Sally Rand.
Oh, a book by Sally Rand? What's the name of it?
Life with Feather. And you know something? It tickles me silly.
Why, Mr. Mailman, do you still have your mind on pretty girls?
Oh, yes, Cookie, but it just don't do me no good. I feel just like the coach of the Southern California football team.
Yeah. Yeah, what do you mean?
Well, honey, the game is over, but I'm still dreaming of making passes. Toodaloo, chicken. I'll see you later, honey.
Judy, is there any mail for me this morning?
No, Aunt Aggie.
But look, here's that article about Humphrey Cooper.
Oh, boy, ain't he handsome?
Judy, all you talk about is Humphrey Cooper. Are you sure he's not just a passing fancy? Are you sure it's the real thing?
It must be, Aunt Ag. Every time I think about him, my toes curl up. Comes in mighty handy for opening Coca-Cola bottles.
Judy, a girl should think a long time before she marries anyone. Remember, marriage is a question of give and take.
Yeah, and the question is, where can I find a man who's willing to take what I got to give? Golly, I wished I knew what Humphrey was looking for in a girl.
Well, maybe you can find a hint in that magazine article.
Say, you're right, Aunt Aggie. Listen to what Humphrey says here on page 16 about his ideal girl.
The girl I marry must have the beauty of a Hedy Lamarr.
I ain't got that.
The charm of an Ingrid Bergman.
I ain't got that.
The sex appeal of Betty Grable.
Well, no, I ain't got that.
And the spirit and dash of a thoroughbred horse.
Put a saddle on my back and call me Trigger. He even mentions my name in this article.
Well, what does he say, Judy?
Judy Canova has a few of the qualities of my ideal girl.
That's me, Aunt Aggie.
Everywhere I go, I see her face. Last night, I saw it as clearly as any picture. Nothing could have made me happier. Then the fog came in and her face was completely hidden. Nothing could have made me happier.
Hey, that don't sound right, does it?
When I do marry, we'll settle down, and in time, I hope we will hear a little wail in the nursery.
A little wail? Shucks, I was hoping we'd have children.
Well,
how could I dress a whail? Be blubbering all over the place. Can you imagine me singing Go to Sleep, You Little Baby, to a whale? This thing would slip out of my arms. I couldn't help it.
Well, Judy, Humphrey certainly speaks highly of you in this article. I can't understand why he hasn't called since the night he took you to dinner at his mother's house.
Neither can I, Aunt Aggie. I sure watch my etiquette. That was the night you told me to watch Humphrey's mother and use the same fork she did.
Well, did you?
Well, sure, but I had to wait till her back was turned before I could grab it. I got stabbed 6 times before I could get it away from her.
Judy.
She's a strong woman, yes.
Judy, if I were you, I wouldn't be too concerned. You have plenty of time for marriage. Why, you're barely dribbling into your 20s.
I know, but I better grab a man before I start flopping over into my 40s. Hey, you know something, Aunt Ag?
What, Judy?
I think I'll go and see that Swami fortune teller down the street. I bet he can tell me if Humphrey's the man I'm going to marry. Look into my future and tell me what you see.
Abacadabra alakazam. Give me your hand and I will read your palm.
Okay.
You have peculiar lines. Your lines curve in all directions.
Shucks, it's just this old girdle I'm wearing. Swami, never mind my lines. Now, what about my future?
To foretell your future, I will look into my crystal ball.
Hey, your crystal ball has 2 holes in it. What are they for?
On Tuesday night, I go bowling. but wait. I see you married to a handsome man. You will have a baby. He will look like his father. You will be very grateful.
So will the baby. Say, is this handsome fellow I'm going to marry named Humphrey Cooper? I want to find out if we're soulmates.
Does this man like you?
Yep.
Are you positive?
Shucks, only screwballs are crazy enough to be positive.
Are you sure?
I'm positive. Well, I am. Swami, how do I find out if Humphrey's going to be the man for me?
Here, I am going to give you this dream pill. It will make you dream of your real soulmate.
Oh, boy, that sounds swell. When do I take this dream pill? Dream pill.
Take it before you go to sleep tonight. And pleasant dreams.
Thank you, Swami. I'll let you know how things come out.
Judy, did the Swami tell you who your dream man will be?
No, Aunt Aggie, but I sure hope it's Humphrey Cooper. If it ain't, I'll settle for a handsome man with $10 million.
Judy, a handsome man can be an awful headache.
Yeah, but with $10 million, you can buy an awful lot of aspirin. Golly, Aunt Aggie, I can't wait till tonight. Maybe I'll dream that Humphrey's kneeling at my side with an engagement ring in his hand. Then he'll look up at me, and in his deep, romantic voice, he'll say...
Pardon me for talking in your face, Senorita.
Oh, hello, Pedro. Say, you look kind of sad today.
Si, Senorita. My cousin Gonzalez got a broken leg from a cold in the head.
Oh, don't be silly, Pedro. Nobody gets a broken leg from a cold.
Gonzalez did. He stopped to sneeze in front of a fire engine. Senorita, I have had bad luck all day.
More bad luck?
Si. I was fixing the hot water pipes and I nearly tore my arm out of the socket.
Oh, my. How did that happen?
The instruction book said to fix pipes, twist the elbow until it comes off. Senorita, my girl is glad I am such a handy man. Someday we might get married.
Pedro, is your girl attractive?
Oh, Senorita, she has beautiful long hair growing down her back.
She has?
Si. I wish more of it would grow on her head.
Pedro, tell me, what do you do for entertainment when you have a date with your girl?
Well, Senorita... Sometimes when I am sitting alone with my girl in the parlor, the lights are low,
Her little Airedale sits by her feet. Oh, it is so romantic. The parlor lights are soft and the radio is playing sweet music. And then she puts her head on my shoulder. Then I put my arm around her waist.
Ooh, Pedro, then what do you do?
I feed dog biscuits to the Airedale. Well, I will go now, senorita. Hasta la vista.
You're hot as a pistol, too, Fade.
Hello, everybody. Hello. Halo is the shampoo that glorifies your hair. So, hello, everybody. Hello.
Use Halo shampoo if you want naturally bright and beautiful hair. Remember, even finest soaps and soap shampoos hide the natural luster of your hair with dulling soap film. But Halo contains no soap, therefore cannot leave dulling soap film. The first time you use Halo, your hair glistens in all its natural brilliance. The natural color and luster shine through like sunshine through a clean window pane. And remember, even in hardest water, Halo makes oceans of rich, fragrant lather. Halo quickly carries away loose dandruff and grease. Needs no lemon or vinegar rinse, because Halo leaves no dulling soap film. Nothing to hide your hair's natural beauty. Say hello to Halo and goodbye to dulling soap film. Use Halo on your children's hair, too. Get Halo shampoo at any cosmetic counter. Remember, Halo glorifies your hair.
So hello, everybody, hello. Halo shampoo, Halo.
Now back to Judy Canova and the Sportsman and a heap big peaceful type song.
A medicine man I met said, don't get yourself in a sweat. When things look great, just shrug and say, it must fence to hook my head.
So don't get yourself in a snit, he said.
Tuck your tantrums into your kit instead.
It's disarming to be charming,
quote the medicine man,
whom all the three explain to see nobody could be wiser than.
So if your temper's getting the top hand, all you gotta do is just stop and
pass that peace pipe and bury that hatchet
like the Choctaws, Chickasaws, Chattahoochee, Chippewas do. If you're feeling mad, the wet hint,
mad as you can possibly get, then pass that peace pipe and bury that tomahawk like those Cheechy Mecs, Cherokee Puffs, and Pecs too. Don't be cranky,
try to use a little restraint.
Hold that hanky and wipe off all of that war paint.
And if you find yourself in a fury,
be your own judge and your own jury. Pass that peace pipe and bury that hatchet
like the Choctaws, Chickasaws, Chattahoochee, Chippewas too.
If you want a hover out west too,
you will soon discover it's best to
pass that peace pipe and bury that hatchet like the Jones, Jones, Chattanooga, Chickasaws too.
Chicken. We'll be back with part two of Judy Canova, the Dream Pills.
Why not?
Can't think of any reason why not.
That's what that's why I always say, why not?
That's right. There's no answer to that.
No, because he's probably got
it
himself
was
on
all
mute.
A bad dream.
There you go. Or as the goat would say,
There I
go.
Missed the goat.
Yes, it was all about dreams.
It was.
There it is. All
right. Beat the hell out of that sound bite. count on it.
Always
Judy Canova. Great to hear Mel Blanc in there.
Yep. And she started off, mother was a singer, dad was a businessman. A businessman. And started off with her and her two brothers. They became a vaudeville routine way back when. And the Three Georgia Crackers, they were known as.
Yep.
She made it onto radio in 1931 from Rudy Valley, who got a lot of people started in radio. I guess the funny thing about that is what comes around goes around. For one point, while she in her first marriage, she was having an affair with Edgar Bergen. Edgar Bergen got his start in radio on Rudy Valley as well. He brought a lot of people together.
Well, at least she wasn't having an affair with Charlie McCarthy, so that was good.
Yeah,
that would have been
that would really be a naughty thing to do. Yeah,
naughty.
A naughty.
K-N-O-T-T-Y.
Yeah.
Yes. I'm slow, but I haven't stopped yet.
Need some new batteries, Dale.
Yes, I do. Oh. More than batteries, parts and everything. Let's wrap up. Judy Canova, the dream.
Yeah,
pill.
We got to get to that. Those dream pills, man.
Yeah, man. Keep them away from my cat.
Hot dreams. Dreams, what wonderful dreams Judy expects to have tonight.
Ooh,
Judy has already taken the dream pill and is about to retire as she talks to Geranium.
Say, Geranium, did you ever take a dream pill?
Yeah, Miss Judy. I took a dream pill once to see if I could dream about me and my boyfriend Pomeroy getting married.
Did the dream pill work fast?
Fast? Honey, I went to bed at 10 o'clock, and at 5 minutes after 10, I was singing lullabies and Pomeroy was passing out cigars.
Well, it's too bad your dream didn't come true, Geranium. Maybe it would if you'd lose some weight.
Miss Judy, I have lost 10 pounds, but don't do me no good.
No, why not?
Honey, taking 10 pounds off of me is just like taking one bucket of smog out of Los Angeles.
Well, just keep trying, Geranium, and someday you and Pomeroy will be walking down the aisle together, side by side.
Side by side? If Pomeroy's going to walk down the aisle with me, it'll have to be Spangle Five.
Oh, Geranium, you're always kidding about your figure.
Oh, that's right, Miss Judy. I guess I got a figure like a pack of cards.
Figure like a pack of cards, huh?
Yeah, the deck has been shuffled around a bit, but it's still well stacked.
Why don't you go to sleep?
Well, I'm trying to, Aunt Aggie. I've taken the dream pill. Maybe I better say the magic words again. Abba-dabba, sleep. Abba-dabba, sleep. Hey, it works.
It does?
Yeah, my abba-dabba's asleep. Gee, Aunt Aggie, dreams sure are strange, ain't they?
Oh, they certainly are, Judy.
Yeah, you know, last night, I dreamt I was living back in 1776.
Back in 1776?
Uh-huh. Paul Revere came riding up to warn me that the British were coming. I was sitting there in the window with my hair done up in curlers and cold cream all over my face.
Well, what did Paul Revere do when he saw you?
He turned around and went back to warn the British. You blame him? I don't.
Well, Judy, try to go to sleep. Now, I'll turn out the light.
Okay, Aunt Aggie. Ooh, I am getting sleepy. Oh, very sleepy. I wonder what I'll dream. Golly, I'm a castaway.
I'm a castaway on a South Sea island.
Ugh, white woman, who are you?
I'm Judy Canova. My boat crashed on that rock. Did you ever see such a horrible wreck?
Maybe you'll look better when you get your hair combed.
The breakers carried me ashore. Where am I?
You landed on Bali.
I sure did, and it knocked the wind out of me. Say, how did you get on this island?
3 years ago, a big wave picked me up on the beach.
Then what happened?
When she got out of the Navy, we got married. She was the first sailor I ever kissed.
I know the curse of the voodoo. I know the curse of the voodoo.
What is it?
I can't tell you. I never cursed.
Crazy island. How can I get off?
If you want motorboat, I can get you putt-putt. Or maybe you like better a putt-putt-putt.
Well, what's the difference between a putt-putt and a putt-putt-putt?
Putt. Why you not stay here? This island is paradise, except for one thing. We have a big inflation here.
Big inflation? Somebody talk about me. Geranium, what are you doing here?
That ain't my name. Down here, I'm called Princess Fatima. Yeah, I'm a great big person south of the equator.
Yeah, you ain't so small north of it, neither. Say, Fatima, can you do the hula?
Oh, anybody can do the hula. All you got to do is put on a skirt with a layer of wheat, a layer of barley, and another layer of wheat.
Then what?
Then you just rotate the crop.
Mr. Native, I'm getting hungry. Can you get me some food?
Sure. Me can sell you meal or fix your car. Me run local hot dog stand and filling station. There's my sign over there. See?
Oh, yeah. It says Shorty's Place. Stop. Eat here and get gas.
Look. Somebody coming up beach.
Why, it's Humphrey Cooper. Humphrey!
Judy! Judy Canova. Oh, Judy, I'm so happy to see you. I could kiss your hand.
Oh, come on, Humphrey. You can be happier than that.
Judy, I couldn't be any happier. Why, I'd rather be cast away on a desert island with you than Dorothy L'Amour. That was only a bird, Judy.
Big one, ain't he? With a mustache yet.
Judy, this is the perfect situation. The two of us, alone together.
Yeah, Humphrey. I'm here and you're there.
Yes. I'm a man and you're a woman.
Yeah, I hope they don't start the OPA again and change everything. Humphrey, kiss me.
Oh, but Judy, I...
Don't talk. Just kiss me.
Judy, I don't like that look in your eye.
Why not? You put it there.
All right, Judy. I'm going to kiss you.
And I'm going to kiss you.
Ah, lips like a pressure cooker. Judy, this settles it. We're going to get married.
Oh, Humphrey.
We'll raise a family. We'll name our children after the months of the year. January, February, March, April, May, June, July, August, September...
Hey, wait a minute.
What's the matter?
If there's another one, we'll name it Sunday.
Sunday, why?
By that time, I'll be ready to call it a day.
Judy will be back in just a minute. But meanwhile, let me read a letter the Colgate Palmolive Peat Company received from a Super Suds fan. Gentlemen, I just want you to know how much pleasure I get from your radio show. I want you to know, too, how much I've learned from listening to Mr. Petrie. That's me. When he says no other soap in the world can wash clothes whiter, get out more dirt than new 1948 Super Suds, he knows what he's talking about. I wash for my husband, my children, my grandchildren, and I've got to have suds. Those extra suds for extra whiteness I get with new Super Suds sure wash my white clothes extra white. And I use no bleach, just like they say. I've always used Super Suds, but I declare this new Super Suds has out-sudsed itself. Now I know one package sure could make a truck full of suds. Gentle on hands and bright colors, too. Signed, Mrs. May Smith, New York. And like Mrs. Smith, housewives all over the country are rushing for new 1948 Super Suds with extra suds for extra whiteness. At your dealers now.
No other soap in the world can wash clothes whiter. And remember, you need no bleach.
Super suds, extra suds for whiter duds.
Now back to Judy Canova and the sportsman singing...
It's a lonesome old town when you're not around. I'm lonely as I can be.
Of introducing a new song from England. Your letters have expressed a desire to again hear how lucky you are.
As you walk, as you talk with the one you love, do you know just how lucky you are? When you stroll hand in hand, neath the moon above, does your heart sing how lucky you are? There's so many heartaches in this world of ours, but sometimes a dream.
The Judy Canova Show is written by Fred Fox and Henry Hoople with John Ward and is produced and directed by Joe Rhines. This is Howard Petrie asking you to use Halo Shampoo to glorify your hair and the new 1948 Super Suds with extra suds for extra whiteness. Now, here's Judy.
Thank you, Howard. Folks, it was awfully nice being with you tonight, and I hope we'll all be together again next Saturday night. In the meantime, please don't forget the two products that bring us together each week, Halo Shampoo and Super Sud, the bestest in the world. This is Judy Canova from Hollywood singing, go to Cece, little baby, go to Cece, little baby, when you wake your patty, patty cake, and ride a shiny little pony.
Colgate Dental Cream cleans your breath while it cleans your teeth. No other toothpaste does a better job of cleaning teeth. For Colgate's cleans teeth thoroughly, safely, brings out natural sparkle and beauty. And scientific tests prove conclusively that in 7 out of 10 cases, Colgate dental cream instantly stops unpleasing breath that originates in the mouth. So always use Colgate dental cream after you eat and before every date to clean your breath while you clean your teeth. Stay tuned to Kay Kaiser's College of Musical Knowledge for this new feature, Comedy of Errors, which follows immediately.
This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.
9 out of 10 dentists recommend Horrible Horror starring Gar the Ghoul on Saturdays at 8 o'clock, right after 8 o'clock Eastern, right after Erie House Radio on Saturdays. How about that?
Early shameless promotion tonight.
I always put a Kirby line before 8 o'clock because it might start at 8. It might not. It might be 8:05. Yeah. It might be a little bit early, a little bit late. Yeah.
It's all right. Time to get popcorn or something, you know.
So Judy Canova was born about 30 minutes from where I live. Isn't that crazy?
Wow.
Wow.
She seems like a Virginia, early Florida. Day hee-haw type show.
Yeah,
in a sense she was, yeah, and she did this yodeling bit and stuff that we've heard in other shows along with her song.
Not many female entertainers in those days could really project like she could.
Well, it's not just that. How many female entertainers like that got their own show? Certainly a sitcom, or a variety of sitcom type thing. I'm thinking of Lucille Ball, and I'm thinking of Judy Canova, and I'm not coming up with a whole lot of other names. Maisie was really more than a series of dramas than it was comedic dramas, but they're still dramas. So I'm thinking she was one of the few that had when they got to television, there were more of them as Joan Bennett got a show and some other people like that, but. Yeah, she was not many got that, but again, we got our good friend Mel Blanc all over that show.
Yeah.
Right.
I was also referring to just the power of her voice. You know what I mean? She could really, really belt it out.
Who else do we think of as a belter but Ethel Merman, you know, something like that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That and Kate Smith, those two could belt it out. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. There you go. Yeah.
But go ahead.
I was just going to say, Judy Canova is kind of like Carol Burnett on Hee Haw.
The little vignettes they had and songs they sang along. And yeah, absolutely.
I'm new to Judy Canova. I am unaware of this person, and wow, what a footprint she has on media across her time period.
Yeah,
And her daughter was on Soap, the 1970s, 80s comedy program.
Yeah.
I didn't realize that.
And good old Bob reports that she started her... Well, as Dave mentioned, her show business career with a family vaudeville routine, joining her sister Annie and brother Zeke. Their performances as the Georgia Crackers took them to Florida theaters to the Village Barn, a Manhattan club.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. Ooh. Yeah. Like I said, yeah.
Yeah.
Big stuff with Florida there.
Her daughter's Diana Canova. Yes.
Right.
And,
who was in soap like
and,
I said,
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, oil too, I think. You've heard of Canova oil, right?
Mm-hmm.
No, that's canola.
Yeah.
Canola, too.
Oh, that's different. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's cooking. Yeah.
Canola.
Yeah, she's on the Food Network, too.
Canola.
She's on the Food Network. Yeah,
I think I'm seeing the difference here.
A little bit. Yeah. One's an oil and the other one's greasy. Yeah, okay.
Yeah,
greasy people can be fun.
Yep.
Yeah, just the flavor in which she. Go ahead.
No, I was just thinking the other guy couldn't think of Gerald Moore. Gerald Moore was in this, and I never heard him do comedy before. He did Philip Morris, and he did a pilot, second pilot for Johnny Dollar. But I'd heard him in some other things. I don't think I've ever heard him do comedy before this show.
He did it well.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't particularly gravitate towards the country-esque, so that may be why she isn't on my radar, because it looks like she was
She played a hillbilly type, you know, a character, which she was not, but that's what she ran with, and it worked for her.
Kind of a mini Pearl type.
Yeah, something like that.
I am unsure as to what a Florida accent is. I don't know if that's country or not, but I do know what the Georgia one is. Oh, buddy.
It is southern, but it's distinctive from like Alabama or Georgia or something like that.
Tennessee. I'm coming over here in Tennessee. How you doing?
Or that Arkansas place.
Arkansas. That's down the holler a ways from here. All right. What's next on our port affair?
Oh, gosh.
You want to work up to
we
that?
We might
one?
As well. It's like in chronology, I believe, here.
Wait, well, I mean just
that'll depend on our broadcast date of our next show. This will be The Shadow then with The Dream of Death.
And The Dream of Death. And we have a broadcast date of January 27th.
Before the date. Okay. After this show, you're going to say something to yourself, folks.
Yes, it was all about dreams.
Yes, it was.
Yes.
And we can ask that broadcast date again, sir?
I'm saying that already. January 27th, 19... What? 27? No, that's not right.
No.
Wait, hang on. Bear with me. No, it's a wrong freaking button. Okay, let's see. 1946. Okay, there we go.
1946.
Yeah, I don't know where I got. I repeated 27. 1946. There we go. Good grief.
1912. Oh, no. In the hearts of men.
It was all about dreams.
Shadow Moon.
Once again, your neighborhood blue coal dealer brings you the thrilling adventures of the Shadow, the hard and relentless fight of one man against the forces of evil. These dramatizations are designed to demonstrate forcefully to old and young alike that crime does not pay. As you probably know, reliable sources forecast that all home heating fuels will be scarce this winter. If you heat with coal, you're lucky. You can store coal, but get your order in early. Ask your blue coal dealer to schedule your delivery as soon as he can. Make sure that you order the right size of coal for your furnace. If you're not sure what it should be, ask him. Your Blue Coal dealer will be glad to inspect your heating plants and may be able to make other recommendations, too, that will help you to get more heat and to burn less fuel. First thing tomorrow, call the nearest Blue Coal dealer and ask him to schedule an early delivery of your Blue Coal. The shadow who aids the forces of law and order is in reality Lamont Cranston, wealthy young man about town. Years ago in the Orient, Cranston learned a strange and mysterious secret, the hypnotic power to cloud men's minds so they cannot see him. Cranston's friend and companion, the lovely Margot Lane, is the only person who knows to whom the voice of the invisible shadow belongs. Today's drama, Dream of Death. From a lonely house by on a gale-swept cliff, a curtain flaps at an open window. A path, house down past sharp crags and mossy rock, down to the wave-lashed beach below. Come along, my darling. We're almost to the beach.
Jerry, I'm pointing.
There. Feel the wet sand beneath our feet.
Yes.
Listen to those waves, Lily, crashing against the shore.
No.
Look at them, black and hungry. They know. The waves know why we're coming to them.
I'm afraid.
Hold tightly to my hand. Soon, my darling, we'll be together once again for all eternity. Slowly, slowly now, down into the water. Don't look back.
Chris, can you reach the sun?
No, Lilith. Eve, the water is swirling above our knees.
What?
Above our waist. Above our shoulders. Fire. Fire.
What?
We die. And we never...
No. I don't want to die. I don't want to
wake up, Lyra. For heaven's sake, wake up.
Dolores?
Yes, darling, your sister. It's all right, Lyra. You're all right. You were just having a bad dream.
Dream? No. I was on the beach, in the water, with my husband, with Kurt.
With Kurt? Oh, no, Lyra, no, don't you remember?
What?
He's dead. Kurt was drowned last night.
Margot and I came right down as soon as we got your message, Celeste.
Well, I'm awfully glad you're here, Mr. Cranston.
So are we, Celeste. Especially if there's anything we can do to help.
Yes, after all, Kurt Sander was a friend of mine, even though I didn't see him for some time.
Oh, I'm sure you can help both of you. We'll see Lyra in just a moment. She was still sleeping when I went in. The doctor prescribed all the rest she could get.
Of course.
There's a beautiful view from this window. Beach down there below the cliffs and the sea beyond.
Yes. Kurt loved solitude.
There's a wind rising. Must be a storm coming up.
It was just this kind of a day that Lyra and Kurt went sailing.
Was he when Kurt was lost?
Yes.
You still haven't told us what did happen, Celeste. Perhaps before we see Lyra, we should know.
Yes, of course. Well, they were out sailing. A violent squall came up and the boat capsized.
How awful.
Apparently, Kurt struck his head against the boat when it turned over on him.
I see.
Anna, our housekeeper, and I were shopping at the time. When we got back, we found Lyra down on the beach, nearly dead from shock and exhaustion.
How is she now?
Well, physically, the doctor says she'll be all right, but... Oh, Mr. Cranston, it's her mind. She insists that she's going to die. She thinks that Kurt's spirit has returned to take her back with him into the sea.
How terrible.
She says they had some kind of a weird pact with death. Do you think you'll be able to reason with her, Mr. Cranston?
Try, Celeste. I'll do everything I can.
I'll see if she's awake now. I'll be right back. Lamont, darling, what are you looking at?
These books on spiritualism. It's almost forgotten.
Forgotten what?
Kurt Sander was a student and a firm believer in life after death. Come on, Margot.
Just woke up. Yeah. Yeah, this is Lamont Cranston. Lamont Cranston?
Yes, Mrs. Sander. I was a friend of Kurt's, and this is Margot Lee.
Hello, Leah. You've come to take me away, haven't you? You must take me away from this house.
No, they can't, Leah. You know you can't leave yet, not until you're better.
But I can't stay here. Maybe he'll come back for me.
Oh, he won't, Mrs. Sander.
Yes, he will. He said, if I should die before you, my darling, I'll return from wherever I may be and take you with me.
Mrs. Sander, that isn't possible.
It is. He'll come back. I mustn't stay here. He'll come back for me. He'll come back.
Come on, listen.
Kurt, is that you?
Yeah, well.
Quiet. Get back, Margot. Open those French windows. That's a woman.
Oh, it's Anna, our housekeeper, Mr. Cranston. Anna, what on earth were you doing?
I just wanted you to let me in the door.
Why didn't you come in through the back?
I just came up from the beach. I was gathering clams for dinner.
All right, Anna. Come inside so I can shut these doors again.
You'd best shut them tight.
Why?
I've been down on the beach, and I've seen it.
Seen what, Anna? Well, Anna, what did you see down on the beach?
I saw another storm coming up. Another storm like the one the night Mr. Sander died.
What made you scream, Mrs. Sander?
I was asleep, and something woke me up. I felt cold fingers around my throat. It was Kurt. He'd come for me.
Look, Lamont, French doors.
Wind must have blown them open. That's probably what woke her up. I'll have a look outside.
It was Kurt.
No, Mrs. Sander.
Oh, what happened, Margot? I was asleep. I heard a scream.
She saw someone was in the room. Her husband.
Oh, no, darling. It just couldn't be.
Right, Mrs. Sander. There's no sign of anyone. You've merely had another bad dream.
That's what you say.
Anna.
I've been outside the room, listening. It was him, wasn't it? He's lonely. He's come back.
Anna, what are you trying to do?
Go back to your room, Anna. All right. But I know. I know.
Now, Mrs. Sander, try to understand it. It was all in your mind. Do you understand?
Yes. All in my mind.
I try to go back to sleep.
Celeste. Yes.
I think it'd be a good idea if you slept in here for the rest of the night.
Oh, yes, of course, I will.
Come on, Margot.
What is it, Margot? There is something wrong, I can tell.
Let's get your coat. I'm going to do a little investigating.
But
I lied in order not to frighten Mrs. Sander. I found this just outside the French doors.
Seaweed?
Yes, seaweed. Someone or something brought up from the ocean below.
Oh. Who's there?
Oh, someone.
Please, Mr. Sander.
Anna.
Anna.
No, I won't.
Come with me. It's about him.
About him?
Hush.
All right, Anna.
That's right. Now through this door. hall. This room. This was Kurt's room, yes. Look, here on the desk. Picture of me, my necklace. He was to get these things, things that belong to you. He'd go back to the sea and leave you alone.
That's insane.
I'll
mm-hmm.
take them to him.
You know where he is?
In the cave at the bottom of the cliff.
How do you know? Have you seen him? Have you?
No. There's a black pool in the cave, and I've seen strange footprints around.
No!
Things live in that pool. Terrible things that come up from the sea.
No, don't! Don't go near there, please.
I'll be all right. Nothing will harm me.
No,
he doesn't want me, Miss Vera. He wants you.
But what are we looking for, Lamont?
Anything here on the beach, Margaret, that might give us a clue as to who or what left the seaweed outside Lyra's room?
You think someone has taken advantage of Kurt's death to deliberately frighten Lyra out of her mind?
It seems to be the logical explanation right now.
That old housekeeper Anna's certainly been acting strangely enough.
Yes. I haven't been able to make up my mind yet whether Anna is a slightly demented old servant or a very shrewd woman. Mm. Another thought has crossed my mind.
What's that?
Kurt was a very odd person, as I remember him, Margaret. Moody, introspective, and, as we know, a firm believer in spiritualism.
You aren't suggesting that there might be some basis for this wild idea Lyra has about Kurt returning from the dead?
Nobody's ever discovered just how far spiritualism can go.
That's a fantastic idea, Lamar.
Fantastic and terrible. But an idea we may have to consider. We're going to learn the truth about Lyra's dream of death.
Bubbling pool. Don't be scared. Dead things can't harm honest folk. Kneel down over here. Kneel down by the pool. Now, give him the things. Give him the things and tell him to go away. Leave us alone. Now, someone kicked over the lantern. Who's there? Who's there? Come closer.
Booga booga.
Someone covered
me, Fran.
Kurt, you. No, no, you're dead. Sorry, no, don't.
And
we are pushing
dead.
My head under the
We'll return to the shadow in just a moment. Friends, you're missing a lot. If you don't have a Blue Coal Temp Master heat regulator on your coal furnace, you're missing the wonderful work-saving ease that automatic temperature control gives. You're missing the even, steady, healthful heat that could be yours. And you're missing the big savings in fuel that a Temp Master makes possible. Altogether, you're missing the carefree heating comfort you should have. But why wait any longer? Call the nearest Blue Coal dealer and ask him to demonstrate the new Blue Coal Temp Master. The Temp Master is an entirely new kind of automatic heat regulator for coal furnaces. The electric eye thermostat upstairs keeps your home exactly at the temperature you set on the dial, eliminating all those trips to the basement to adjust dampers. Furnace controls are operated automatically as needed, and the electric eye thermostat actually shows you the exact position of those dampers. This winter, save coal, save trouble, and get much better, much more healthful heat with a Blue Coal Temp Master. It can be easily installed without interrupting the heat in your home. Only Blue Coal dealers have them. Blue Coal dealers are listed in the classified section of your telephone book. Call the nearest Blue Coal dealer tomorrow and ask him for a demonstration of the new Blue Coal Temp Master.
Man, if that doesn't keep your house warm, burn a tire. It'll be fine.
Have you guys ever been around a coal-fueled furnace of any type?
Yes. This
not a coal fuel. No.
I knew these people.
Heating oil
wouldn't...
and gas and electric, but not the coal. The heating oil has a nice smell to it too.
Yeah, heating oil, yeah, I don't like the oil. But when I was a plumber in the mid-1980s, one of my 5,628 jobs, I was sent down underneath a house, and I had to hammer drill through the perimeter wall. And the place I had to do it was an old coal bin, and I was covered in just black coal soot. Dust, but it was rough.
So I've been
that's as close as I've ever gotten to an actual coal. I've worked with gas, I've worked with oil, but coal, not so much.
Wow. And now coming out this week, the dangers of gas stoves.
If it's vented correctly, there's no danger. I don't know.
They can come from my gas stove when they can pry it from my cold, dead fingers.
Yeah, from your cold, dead, I wish I had gas heat hands. Yeah, right.
Yeah,
that's right.
I've heard that, and I don't know what that's about. Into the line of eggs are now worth the same price as gold now. I don't know.
Oh, my gosh. $4 a dozen.
Depending on where you go.
What's the easy answer?
You go to our Acme and there's $6 a dozen.
Chicken.
Yeah.
Get a chicken, a rooster, have a good day. And all of a sudden you've beaten this problem. I heard about that. I was like, what? Just go get a chicken. I heard I hear that there's a governor that's giving chickens away to people for free, and it's really aggravating the poultry industry or something. I'm like, what? Really? Come on. Seriously? We used to be an agricultural country, and which meant that families created their own food somewhat.
Yep.
Or they would barter with different people, with different foodstuffs. But, we've gotten so far away from what we were.
That's why I like
so
gardening.
Far. All a bad dream. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was a bad American dream. There you go.
But I'll bet the shadow didn't have trouble cooking.
There you go.
No.
There you go.
Pull it back. Twice those eggs when he's invisible.
Blue coal.
Blue coal.
What evil lurks in a chicken coop?
Dream of Death, Part 2.
Now, back to the shadow.
Bit, I say.
On the trail of a man who apparently has returned from the dead to claim his bride, Margot and Lamont are plunged into a series of weird events. Now we find them walking down a dark beach, while above them tower the black cliffs that rise forebodingly. Suddenly, Margot stops and touches Lamont's arm.
Lamont, look up ahead.
Good Lord, come on.
Falling here in the water by the edge of the shore.
Yes. Hannah, the hospital.
She's dead?
Yes, drowned apparently, and the body washed ashore. This is strange, Martin.
What?
There are finger marks around her neck. Someone deliberately held her head under the water.
No. Not what you're doing.
I'm going to try something loose. It's touched my hand.
It's a torn piece of cloth, and there's a pearl button on it.
Yes, the kind of button is usually found on men's yachting jackets.
And curtains and sailing clothes when you die.
Yes, Martin, it was. But look here. It's a faint trail in the sand.
Looks as though Anna's body was dragged down here.
Trail leads up to a kind of opening in the cliff. Come on.
Lord, I just don't understand.
Neither do I, but there must be a logical explanation behind all this. I've got a feeling we're getting close to the answer.
I certainly hope so.
Here we are. Kind of a tunnel into the base of the cliff.
You're not going in.
Yes. Stay behind me. I'll use my flashlight.
Why, it's a big cave.
Yes.
You see anything?
Black pool of water in the center of the cave.
You sure that's all?
Yes.
Oh, thank heaven. Let's get out of here. Give me the creeps.
Quiet, Mark.
What?
Look out through the mouth of the cave. Out there on the beach. Someone kneeling down by Anna's body.
What? It's Celeste.
Yes. What would Lyra's sister be doing out there on the beach at this time?
She's coming towards us.
She's following the same trail up here we followed. Stand back, Margo. I'll switch off the flash.
Kirk, are you in there?
Come on.
What's that? Kirk, was that you?
No, sir.
Lamont, she's running away up the path to the house.
Yes.
Lamont, do you realize what this means?
I am beginning to, Margo.
Kurt is alive, not dead. He must be the one who's trying to drive Lyra mad. Anna must have found the truth, and that's why he killed her.
Perhaps and perhaps not, Margot. Now I think I can find out.
How?
I think Celeste will tell me a great deal when she talks to the shadow.
The gun, it must be... What is this? Who's there? Who laughed?
Shadow laughed, Celeste.
The shadow? The gun. Somebody took the gun from my hand. But who? Where?
No one sees the shadow.
Shadow, what do you want?
What are you going to do with this gun, Celeste?
What?
Are you going to kill your sister, Lyra?
No, why should I do that?
Because you haven't been able to make her kill herself the way you and Kurt planned.
That's not true.
Kurt's not dead. You've been working together. That's true, isn't it, Celeste?
No.
Kurt was in love with you, wasn't he? But Lyra stood in your way.
Oh, yes, he was in love with me. He begged me to marry him.
And Kurt, he's alive.
Yes, yes, that's why I came for the gun. He's out of his mind. He killed Anna, and he'll kill my sister, too.
What were you doing down on that beach by Anna's body?
I was looking for Lyra. She's gone. Oh, he'll kill her, don't you understand? Oh, Shadow, you've got to find him before it's too late.
Shadow will find the truth, Celeste. If you've lied, I'll be back. You'll answer to the Shadow.
Lyra? Lyra, are you in there?
Try the door, Lamont. Empty.
Yes, Celeste told the shadow the truth. Kurt must have taken her off somewhere.
The French doors are standing wide open again.
Yes, look at this, Margot, over here. Some muddy footprints on the carpet.
What do we do?
I don't... Wait a minute. Margot, this isn't mud on these footprints. It's slime. Green slime. The kind that grows on rocks.
You think Kurt has taken us to the cave?
I don't know, Margot. All I know is we better get back there as fast as we can. Careful going into the cave.
Oh, it's so dim in here.
couldn't afford to bring my flashlight, darling. It makes you good a target.
Yes, if Chris is mad as he appears to be, he'd probably shoot first and ask questions later.
Listen now, darling.
What? Over there.
Good Lord, it's
Curdy.
Lyra! I'm telling Lyra, try to hold on. Lyra! It's all right, Lyra. I've got you.
Oh, Mom. He had a gun. He was going to kill me. I grabbed his arm and I went off.
Lyra?
Same.
You better lie here for a moment. I better have a look at Kurt.
Well?
Well, I have to light a match.
Margaret.
Dead, Margo.
Why? I suppose it's just as well.
Yes, I think it is, Margo. Look at this over here.
Yes. A shallow grave. Good heavens, you mean you're going to kill her and bury her in there?
No, Margo, I mean that Kurt Sander came out of this grave. Lure shot didn't kill him. He's been dead for at least 2 days.
Mark, why on earth are we leaving the cave with Lyra still in there with that body?
No time to explain, Margo. I want you to get up the house right away and be careful.
Is that all?
Yes.
But
by the time you get there, Margo, the shadow will have trapped the real killer.
Hardly believe that Lyra is a murderer.
Well, apparently she's a violently jealous woman, Margot. Kurt arranged a rendezvous with her near the cave, asked her for a divorce. Told her he wanted to be free to marry her younger sister, Celeste. And she flew into a jealous rage, killed him, left his body in the cave.
Then her story of the drowning, her dream of death, all those weird happenings, even Anna's murder, were done to frighten people away from here so that no one would learn the truth.
Yes. After she killed Anna, after we started investigating, she became panicky.
So she decided to dispose of Kurt's body.
Exactly. In the dim light, we thought Kurt and Lyra were struggling together. When she heard me call to her, she fired a shot in a crazy last-ditch effort to make us think that Kurt had been alive up to that point. He was responsible for everything.
Oh, horrible. And stupid.
Yes.
Well, it's all over now, thank goodness.
That's all over. Except that soon Lyra will be going to her death. This time, it won't be a dream. And now let me present Blue Coal's distinguished heating authority, John Bartley.
Thank you, Andre Baruch, and good evening, friends. Here's an important tip on economical home heating that will save you time, trouble, and fuel. If you tend your furnace fire the right way, you'll find that your fire will burn more slowly and evenly, and that you'll get more heat from the fuel you burn. When you add coal, do it like this. First, shake the grates gently until the first faint red glow is visible in the ash pit. Then, with the shovel or a small hole, pull the live coals from the back of the firebox up toward the feed door, forming a sloping hollow that leads toward the back. Into this hollow, put your fresh coal. Leave a few glowing coals just inside the fire door to consume gases. The way to conserve coal is not by skimping. Keep a deep fire at all times. I thank you.
This story is copyrighted by Street and Smith Publications, Incorporated. The characters, names, places, and plot are fictitious. Any similarity to persons living or dead is purely coincidental. Again, next week, The Shadow will demonstrate that
the weed of crime bears bitter fruit. Crime does not pay. The Shadow knows.
But the fringe benefits are good.
Next week, same time, same station, your friendly Blue Coal dealer brings you another strange and thrilling adventure in the Shadow's daring battle against the forces of evil. The Shadow is presented by the DL&W Coal Company, distributors of Blue Coal. Lamont Cranston is played by Brett Morrison. Margot by Grace Matthews. Your announcer is Andre Baruch. Remember, it's Blue Coal for finest heating service. It's Blue Coal for finest modern equipment. It's Blue Coal for the best home heat money can buy.
Yeah.
I don't know. Money can buy a lot. Crime does not pay. Well, that's one moral. Erie House Radio proudly presents Gar's Moral of the Story.
The notion of life after death begs one important question. If you come back from the dead, can you apply for Social Security payments?
Yes, it was all about dreams.
Hey, you can vote. All about dreams. That's right.
Yeah. It was a bad dream. I think it was all very nasty that the Shadow was fooling her, trying to tell her he was just that dead guy. That was not very nice.
Yeah.
Not very nice indeed.
The truth had to come out.
Kind of fun.
The truth will set you free. I don't know.
She's an evildoer. She gets what she gets.
That's right, because crime does not pay.
And the hours are good.
Go ahead. Yeah.
Well, the hours are pretty good, yeah.
I don't recall any other Shadow episode where he pretends to be somebody he's not in the Shadow guise.
I agree. I don't remember that either, to be honest with you.
Right. Now,
that's why I was almost disappointed, because he was fibbing. The Shadow was fibbing. That's just not right.
He was fibbing.
Not right.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm okay with it.
You're
I am.
The Shadow was created in a time in radio when no harm could come to a police officer and no criminal could come out on top. Isn't that right, Dave?
Yeah. Yeah, kind of a code there. The movies had it, too. The movies did have it, yeah.
I believe the comics code of approval originally was written like that for comic books as well. After Frederick Wortham had his little tantrum.
I don't know if they had their own measure before Wortham at all, or
became self-governing like the movie theaters. That's why they came up with the comics code, so to keep the government off.
Right, until they snubbed their nose at it and said, no, we're not doing this anymore. And Wortham was discovered to just be a book salesman, and that was all he was. There might have been kind of an unwritten moray, I guess, of not
That's
having
that
crime right. did not win. I'm not sure. I don't have comics dating back that far. But the whole direction of the Shadow and all these other do-gooders was to make sure that didn't happen.
Let's make sure we have time to finish our programming tonight.
That's right.
We have that rare show, at least here in Cleveland. Alien Worlds, a dream within a dream.
Yes.
And do we have a broadcast date for this, Jim?
We have a broadcast date.
Sort of.
Four additional episodes were produced but never aired. The show previously was repeated on Sirius Satellite Radio and the Alien Worlds website, which is closed. Anyway, so I had to extrapolate a date, and I would say that this would have been hypothetically season number 3, only 2 aired. And I gave it a date of January 12th, 1980.
Okay.
Slowly orbiting at the edge of deep space, 1,000 kilometers beyond 21st century Earth, is the Arthur C. Clarke Astronomical Observatory, Starlab. Here, Starlab Research Director Maura Cassidy and scientists and technicians of the International Space Authority watch over the countless star systems that fill the universe. This week, Maura Cassidy and space exploration team captains John Graydon and Buddy Griff encounter the phantoms of Tamerlane and experience a dream within a dream on Alien Worlds.
Starlab Control, this is the Galileo. Do you read me?
This is Starlab. I read you, Galileo. What's your situation, Captain Egan? Where are you?
We're 200 kilometers out at Vector 205. And this isn't Captain Egan. It's Lieutenant Becker. Egan is dead.
Lieutenant Becker, this is Dr. Cassidy. What happened to Captain Egan?
He died in the maelstrom, Dr. Cassidy. A whirlpool in the universe. Captain Egan fell into it and drowned in the stars.
He's either tripped out on something or he's in shock.
Lieutenant Becker, what's the condition of your crew?
Sleeping. They fell asleep on Tamerlane. They're still dreaming.
Call the short-range vehicle hangar, Jerry, and order a couple of tugs out to tow them in.
Right.
And all my days are trances, and all my nightly dreams are where thy dark eye glances, and where thy footstep gleams. In what ethereal trances?
Attention all SRV personnel. This is a priority rescue alert. Prepare 3 Magnum-class tugs for immediate launch. Utility pilots Haskell, Shaw, and Henning, please report to the SRV operations officer.
Leader, Vector 9, again. The Roger Fireframe,
Mission Control, Galaxy 9.
Roger, Starlab. We have the Galileo on sign and she is damaged. Looks like the starboard thruster housing's ripped open and she's leaking fuel. Tug 17.
17, go ahead, Lee.
Yeah, Jamie, see if you can check out that fuel leak, will you?
Roger.
Tug 9? Come on, Ron, I know you're there. I can hear you swearing at your receiver in my headphones.
Sorry about that, Lee. I had to switch to another channel. Your transmission was breaking up.
Okay. Get around to the Galileo's port side and see if you can get a grappler pad on her. Use the standard placement.
Roger. I have grappler contact, Lee. Pad magnetism stable. Okay, Lee, I've closed off the leak.
All right. Now let's get a grappler pad on her starboard side. I'll stick one on the nose.
Roger.
Okay, you guys, let's haul her in.
Five minutes after launch, Space Tugs 2, 9, and 17 return to Starlab with a damaged laboratory ship in tow and guided into Docking Bay 14.
And stand by for incoming casualties.
Thirty minutes after the Galileo's arrival, Starlab's executive physician, Dr. Diana Rossiter, begins a computer-assisted examination of the ship's unconscious crew. Three hours later, Starlab's Mycroft computer completes its analysis of the examination.
Look at the waveform patterns here on screen 3. These are the electroencephalograms of the Galileo's crew. You notice anything unusual?
Looks like the same EEG repeated 10 times.
That's right. And not only are their EEGs identical, they all have the same pulse rate, temperature, respiration, and dream state iRhythms.
Really?
I don't know what happened to them, Maura. But they're all dreaming the same dream.
Alien Worlds will continue. Alien Worlds continues. 6 weeks after its disappearance during a routine mission, the deep space laboratory ship Galileo returns to Starlab, its captain missing and presumed dead, its first officer in a state of second-degree mind shock, its crew asleep and dreaming identical dreams.
What about Lieutenant Becker?
He talked off and on during his examination, but he was getting so anxious I thought it best to sedate him for a while.
Diana, did you record what he said during the examination?
Maddie's making a copy of the tape now. You want to hear it?
Mm-hmm. Have her send it up to my quarters. I'll listen to it when John and Buddy get here.
Solaris to Starlab Control.
This is Starlab. Go ahead, Solaris.
We've picked up some time, Jerry. Our revised ETA is 4 minutes and 13 seconds.
4 plus 13, Roger. Okay, John, your revised docking orbit insertion coordinates are 196 degrees at subvector 20 alpha, docking bay 9.
See you in a few minutes, Jerry. Solaris out.
Starlab clear on IPS channel 096.
You have that look on your face, buddy. What are you thinking?
Remember what Maura said about Lieutenant Becker? You know, that verse he quoted when she asked what happened to Frank?
Yeah, what about it?
Well, it's part of a poem by Thackeray or Tennyson, one of those guys. It's from that period, anyway. I know I've either heard it or read it. Wait a minute. Ingrid. Ingrid read it to me.
Solaris to Starlab Control.
This is Starlab. Stand by. Go ahead, Solaris.
Jerry, patch me through to the library. I have to talk to Ingrid.
Roger. Stand by.
Thank you.
And all my days are trances, and all my nightly dreams are where thy dark eye glances, and where thy footstep gleams, in what ethereal dances, by what eternal streams.
Oh, that's it. What's it from, Ingrid?
It's the last verse of a poem called To One in Paradise by Edgar Allan Poe. And that isn't Lieutenant Becker's only reference to Poe. Buddy, play back the last part of Dr. Rossiter's tape again.
Okay.
They're almost finished, Lieutenant. Now, look into the light.
No, it was dark. It was always dark.
Mm-hmm.
Then Captain Hagen wanted to explore, so we went out in a crawler.
I see. Now, the other eye, Lieutenant.
The whirlpool started. I got scared, and I jumped out of the crawler, and it was swallowed up in a maelstrom. I didn't mean to leave him there.
I know you didn't, Lieutenant.
My hands. When I look at my hands, I see sand. Grains of golden sand. How few, yet how they creep through my fingers to the deep. While I weep. While I weep.
Enough. Lie down, Lieutenant. Come, that's right. Now, I'm going to give you something to make you feel better.
Well, anyway, the whirlpool he mentioned coincides with one of Poe's short stories, A Descent into the Maelstrom.
And the reference to grains of golden sand?
A poem Poe wrote in 1847 after his wife died. A dream within a dream.
Maura.
What is it, Jerry?
You better get up here. I have a transmission coming through on the Mayday frequency. It's Captain Egan.
Egan? What? How can that be?
We're on our way, Jerry.
Somewhere in the Ursa Minor system. The exact coordinates are on the Galileo's flight recorder.
What about the whirlpool, Captain?
An illusion, a dream. Like everything else around here.
What's your situation now, Frank?
Now, the batteries here in the crawler are about gone. So this will have to be my last transmission. And I have rations for 2, maybe 3 days. Get me out of here, buddy. I don't think I can...
Captain Egan? Captain Egan? That's it. We've lost him.
Ingrid, is Tamerlane connected to Poe?
It's one of his most famous poems.
What's it about?
Love, life, death, rebirth, the entire spectrum of physical and mystical experience.
Call Docking Bay 14, Jerry. Tell Simon to disconnect the Galileo's flight recorder and take it to the Solaris.
Okay.
Ingrid, go back to the library and pull everything you have on Edgar Allan Poe. Hard copy, sleep tapes, microcards, everything. Then meet us at the Solaris.
Am I going with you?
You certainly are.
But why?
Because what happened to the Galileo might happen to us. And since this whole incident is somehow connected to Poe, what you know about his work might be our only protection. Okay, let's get busy.
At 13:30 hours, 40 minutes after receiving Captain Egan's transmission, Maura and Ingrid enter Docking Bay 9. And join John and Buddy aboard the Solaris.
Is everything programmed and ready?
Oh, we're all set, Maura.
Good.
Better strap yourselves in. We're due to launch in 90 seconds. Ready?
Let's go.
Okay, Buddy, let's run it down. Exterior hatches and fuel bay doors. Pressurized and locked. Environmental control systems. Green across the board. ECS backup terminal. In phase and programmed for zero-time emergency interlock. Microwave antenna function? Positive. Digital auto guidance and inertial gyro integration? Auto guidance in phase. Gyro integration at 0-3 seconds. Tank pressure. Maximum, 1 through 6. Cancel the ignition safety terminal. Positive function on IST lockout.
Alien Worlds will continue.
And so will we. In fact, we're continuing now. As we
It's almost
present,
as good as Spaceship One.
Almost. Not
almost.
Quite.
Almost.
Not quite.
Yeah,
they,
almost,
they're giving
almost,
it the college try there, but no. Certainly not as good as Horrible Horror Starring Garlic Gold. Saturday's around maybe 8-ish Eastern.
Maybe, yeah.
Yeah.
If
yeah.
he's in the mood.
I have a musical prelude, and if everything is working right, then I'll kick it over and start it around 8-ish. 8 o'clock is kind of the watermark, not the watermark, the target for when I want to start. Watermark.
It's a precise science. It's a science, I tell you. This movie host and business. It's a precise science. Yeah.
Yes.
So the alien world was it says in the Wikipedia, someone wrote, that it became well known for realistic sound effects, like those grappling hooks. Yeah, right, sure.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know. Oh, grappling hook on. Okay, there we go. Cowboy!
Get your popcorn. Get your popcorn now.
Heard something in the background there.
Yeah.
It was all about
a little bit of dog correction.
It's not. It's eerie house.
Is that dog correction? Huh?
No, that's just eerie house neighbors having a good time.
Oh, really? Oh.
Yeah.
Matt, you have thin walls.
Thin windows.
It's worse.
They close
the
windows
basement.
In January out there. Yeah.
I'm in the cellar of Airy House. In the dungeon.
The dungeon. I like that. You ever get everything all cleared out of there? Yeah, you could seriously redo it with dungeon-esque walls and stuff. I mean, there's all kinds of stuff.
I'm already actually there.
Oh, okay. There you go.
I have to light it differently, though, or else there'll be a glare. It's cool. It's cool.
Yeah.
I have work to do.
Yep.
Don't we all?
My plans involve getting a house, hopefully with a basement, either a basement or an attic, one of the two, lots of space.
Yeah.
And then my producer and pal, friend of mine, is going to work on all the lighting and everything for the camera. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Cool.
I got to get out of here, though.
So let's wrap up.
That'll be a lot.
Hey,
yes,
Alien Worlds with the dream within the bad dream.
Yeah, what is all?
Alien Worlds continues. 48 hours after launching from Starlab, the Solaris penetrates the Ursa Minor star system. A constellation filled with glowing stellar dust and brilliant star clusters. A constellation dominated by the second magnitude binary star, Polaris. 3 hours later, guided by the navigation coordinates from the Galileo's flight recorder, the sleek white SET interceptor lands on the dark, mist-shrouded planetoid of Tamerlane.
Open the visual scanner ports, buddy. Let's have a look at this place.
Okay.
Nothing but mist and shadows. Can you move a little to the right, buddy? I can't see the screen from back here.
Oh, yeah, sorry. How's that?
That's fine. It looks like the landscape in the fall of the House of Usher.
Wait a minute. What's that in the corner of the screen?
It's a cat.
Yeah.
A black cat. It's...
Wait a minute. What happened?
Where'd it go? It's gone. Was it really there? It's gone. Maybe it wasn't really there.
It had to be there.
Oh, buddy, I'm so sleepy.
We all saw it, didn't we? Where's Frank? Oh, we have to find Frank.
Go to sleep. Go to sleep. We can't go to sleep. Don't go to sleep.
Hear the tolling of the bells, iron bells. What a world of solemn thought their melody compels. Hear the loud alarm bells, brazen bells. What a tale of terror now their turbulency tells.
In there, Fortunato. The cask of Amontillado is in there.
For the love of God!
He forced the last stone into position and plastered it up. Against the new masonry, I re-erected the old rampart of bones. For half a century, no mortal has disturbed them.
Rest in peace, Fortunato. Requiescat in pace.
Under the floor. He's hidden the old man's body under the floor. Louder. Louder. Louder!
I admit it! Tear up the plank! Stop the beating of his hideous heart!
The vibration of the pendulum was at right angles to my length. It slowly descended, hissing back and forth, repeating its arc again and again.
The shades of evening drew on, within view of the melancholy House of Usher.
And the raven, ever flitting, still sitting, still sitting, on the pallid bust of Pallas, just above my chamber door, and his eyes have all the seeming of the demons that is dreaming.
How shall the burial rite be read? The solemn song be sung? The requiem for the loveliest dead that ever died so young?
All that we see or seem is but a dream within a dream.
Dr. Cassidy. Buddy. John. Buddy. John, wake up. Dr. Cassidy, wake up. Frank, I saw you land about an hour ago. I've been trying to raise you on the crawler short-range transmitter ever since.
Bells. I was dreaming about bells. And some kind of terrible razor swinging back and forth.
And there was a murder. An old man was killed. His body was under a floor, but his heart wouldn't stop beating.
The pit in the pendulum. The telltale heart. Poe, we've all been dreaming about his stories and poems.
Everyone aboard the Galileo had the same dreams. After we landed here to repair the meteorite damage, we saw a black cat. When it ran into the mist, we all fell asleep.
But you weren't asleep the whole time you were here. What woke you up?
Earth tremors and storms. And after every disturbance, the mist would clear long enough for us to see another part of Tamerlane had disappeared. It's losing its molecular density, too. I've been checking it out on the crawler's densiometer. Tamerlane is returning to its own dimension.
What do you mean?
Tamerlane isn't supposed to be in this time-space continuum. Somehow or other, it slipped out of its own dimension. And now, it's slipping back.
How do you know that?
The longer you stay here, the more you dream. And with every dream, you understand a little bit more about Tamerlane and what it is.
Have you found out why all the dreams are related to Edgar Allan Poe?
Yes, I have. I found the house last night.
House? What house?
The house where the dream chamber is. The House of Usher. Come on, I'll show you.
before Tamerlane drops out from under us.
Take my hand, buddy.
Where to, Frank?
Up the stairs, then turn left.
It's freezing in here.
Help me with the door, John.
Impossible.
It's impossible.
It's not a room at all.
Space.
Oh, it's beautiful.
We're in space.
The Dream Chamber. An opening in the time-space continuum. A place enclosed not by walls, but by the golden light and phantom shadows of a parallel universe. A void filled with glittering star fields and an eternity of stellar mists, tinted with all the colors of creation. And in the center of the Dream Chamber, a bed made of interlocking beams of light. And lying on the bed, forever asleep and forever dreaming.
It's him. It's Paul.
Is he alive?
He's a dream, buddy. A dream sustained by everyone who reads his work and falls in love with its beauty and terror, its sorrow, its truth.
Are we looking at eternity?
Well, we're looking at Poe's eternity.
Let's get back to the ship before we get caught in this.
Look, he's standing up.
Ingrid, what's wrong with you? He's not standing up. He's
still... afraid. He's running away.
Ingrid.
Buddy, help me. I can't hear anything.
Help me with her, Frank.
Okay, let's get her out of here.
From Dr. Rossiter. Lieutenant Becker's all right, and so is the Galileo's crew. They woke up about a half an hour ago.
All right, Commissioner. Thank you. See you tomorrow.
ISA comm center clear.
Half hour ago. That means they woke up the instant Tamerlane disappeared.
What are you doing, Ingrid?
The hallucination I had in the Dream Chamber, and that terrible stillness afterwards... I know it's related to one of Poe's stories. I remember something...
I remember.
Here it is. Silence. A fable. And mine eyes fell upon the countenance of the man. And he was afraid.
And he was afraid.
He raised his head and listened.
Raised his head.
But there was no voice throughout the vast, illimitable void. Only silence.
Only silence.
And the man turned his face away and fled into the distance.
And I beheld him.
A Dream Within a Dream was written by Ron Thompson and starred Linda Gary, Chuck Olson, Bruce Philip Miller, Corey Burton, and special guest stars Francis Bay, Clark Warren, Mel Wells, Jack Angel, and Marilyn Schreffer.
Mel Wells?
Associate producer Ron Thompson. Music director Tom Rounds. Engineer Stu Jacobs. Technical consultant Peter Skye. Assistant to the producer, Jim Cook. Alien Worlds was created, produced, and directed by Lee Hansen. And so, until next week, this is Roger Dressler inviting you to join us for the adventure of the Parallax Deception from the elsewhere and elsewhen of Alien Worlds.
Where? Elsewhen. I like that.
Ooh.
Elsewhere and elsewhen, you know.
Yes.
You get it all.
The Parallax Deception. The Parallax Deception was another episode that was never aired when it was released. in the 79, 80s, whenever.
Got my first taste of this from the public library here in Akron. That's where I found first episode that I got to hear.
And then this is the first time anybody's going to hear. Eerie House Radio proudly presents Scar's Moral of the Story.
In space, no one can hear you scream a good Edgar Allan Poe poem. There you go.
Yes, it was all about dreams.
It was all about dreams.
It was.
I used to have a lot of anxiety.
Is there anything about Poe that sticks out in your mind as far as his writings?
It's good material if you're like a goth, depressed person, you know. And I'm not criticizing in any way. It's just a fact. It's.
Yeah, he wasn't known for his writing his sitcoms, yeah.
Yeah, he wasn't right. Captain Cheerful here at all. Part of his
back
charm.
Back when I was in high school, we had a teacher that read his poem, The Bells. And the one word in that has stuck with me all these years, and that's tintinabulation, which
yes.
is the sound that a bell makes.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. I always sticks with me, that one poem, more so than any of the others.
Hmm.
Simply because of tintinabulation.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Say it with us, kids.
Yeah. Intonabulation. Boy, boy.
Gesundheit.
Of the bells, Gesundheit. Bells, bells, bells.
Well,
I mean, she read it, and it was just constantly saying the word bell. It was like, the bells, 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 the intonabulation of the bells.
Spam, 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 spam.
Yeah, yeah, it's like, yeah, I wonder if Spam got their nod from the bells. That would be funny if that was true.
It could be.
I recite The Raven for an eighth grade. Oh, wow. Frogsbane recited The Raven. Nevermore. Yeah, that whole, yeah.
Close.
Yeah.
That's a good one, too. But the bells, that one word sticks in my vocabulary more so than anything else he wrote.
There's only two
I do enjoy The Raven.
Is Annabelle Lee and The Raven are the two that come to my mind.
Mm-hmm. Hey, let's do some more of this tomorrow night with another dream. We'll still be dreaming with The Land of Dreams from CBS Radio Mystery Theater. That's tomorrow at 6:30 Eastern for you live listeners and chatters like GGSI Paper Girl Bob and Fogsbane. Appreciate you joining us, plus others that I know are listening, like Chris, like Jennifer, I feel like Miss Barbara. I see Ted. I see.
Yeah, Miss Barbara. Yeah.
I see Fran. I see, but I don't see Denise, and that's ticking me off. All right. So
we don't see Dale.
No.
Bibbidi bobbidi bibbidi boo. We don't see Dale. I don't know why. We don't like that guy.
In the magic mirror. No, they
He's
never did say my name on those bloody things. We'll see you tomorrow. We're out of here.
Yep.
Good night.
Good night.
Everybody.
Good night.
Where's my outro? There it is.
Castle lights are growing dim. There's no one left but me and him.
And him.
When next we meet in Frankenstone, don't come alone.
Can you dig it?
I can dig it.
I need to.
I really dig it.
I'm digging it.
Can you dig it? I knew you could. What was that from? That was a running gag on something. It was...
What?
There you go.
What?
The gag what or was the punchline was, can you dig it? I knew you could.
Oh, that's in Laughing. Laughing was constantly saying, can you dig it? Can you dig it, sucker?
Definitely the response, I knew you could.
That would be more maybe Laughing that had that payoff line at the end. I'm guessing. You never know.
It's not Laughing, it's Laughing.
Not Laughing.
Laugh out.
Oh, my gosh. Do you remember the little – they had little video vignettes on Laughing that were pre-recorded.
Yes.
Thing. And one of them was Artie Johnson on a tricycle wearing a raincoat and a rain hat.
Your line, Dale, comes from Billy Crystal line. Can you dig it? I knew that you could. Said repeatedly
Thank
in a
you.
Monologue
oh,
of a character named – a character named Face.
Oh, okay.
There you go.
Okay.
And Billy
Thank
Crystal
you.
Nods back to the comedy sitcom Soap starring Diana Canova.
Canova.
Daughter of
Evil Canova. Jumped the Grand Canyon.
Yeah. He just had
Knievel.
The son of Knievel passed away yesterday, I think.
Did he really?
Yeah, Bob Knievel passed away of a cancer problem.
Robbie Knievel, I think, was the son.
Robbie Dobby?
Yeah, I think
Robbie Bobby?
Yeah. That and Lisa Marie Presley.
Beck, was it Jeff Beck of music died?
Jeff Beck.
Yep.
Oh.
I can't be aware of
lies.
I can verify.
We didn't even mention that. That today is Friday the 13th.
Your bad luck was being with us.
Yeah, we thought that would have been too much of a forewarning. They would have left. Yep.
It wasn't planned, but I haven't even gone outside today, so I don't know what the world is doing. Maybe chicken.
You don't want to know.
I don't want to know. Now, question. Why has the price of eggs risen? Is it that chickens aren't laying, or what's going on?
No. It was the bird flu that killed so many chickens, supposedly.
I'm sorry?
You had to kill tons and tons and tons of birds, and because
of
that.
The population of chickens is down.
The population took a nosedive, even though chickens don't have noses. It took a beak dive, and because of that made it more expensive, and that's kind of what happened there.
So someone could become a chicken millionaire if they just got some chickens and started raising them and repopulated the missing stock, right?
Well, I'm sure that they're working
on that.
Who was that
independent politician, the chicken man? What was his name? Oh, Ross Perot. Remember Ross Perot?
Yeah,
the chicken man?
The chicken man. He made his money chicken and grocery
he
stores.
He made his money doing government government processing of documents and stuff. That's how he made his money. Yeah.
I thought he was processing.
Well, another thing that added to Perot's wealth was he jumped on Apple computers missing a copyright deadline or a patent deadline, and he opened up the door. The fact that we have computers that are not Apple is because of Ross Perot. Dell is a prime example of that. He jumped on the opportunity that the patent for computer processors and computer boards had lapsed, and he jumped on it and he opened the door for independent computers. All the off brands that we have now in the market today, but going back, he made boatloads of money on that.
I did not know that. That is interesting.
Yeah, I know you guys might not know it, but I am kind of a computer geek. I'm my own IT guy. Went to college for it. One of my 9,628 jobs. I was in computers.
Then they changed all the computer language.
At least I've got a strong resume.
There you go. A long resume or a strong resume?
Both. Both. Daggity nabbity.
That'd be a good name for a cartoon character.
Daggety Nabbity? Yeah.
Yeah.
What would he do? Or it
I
do?
Have no idea. Anything
would,
he wanted.
Would it
be a cartoon?
Would it be a schmoo?
Schmoo? Something he'd do.
The schmoo.
If not a schmoo-like, I'm sure.
The schmoo is like a formless character in Fred Flintstone, I think.
Schmooish.
Not to be confused with, oh, what was it? The geek that was in Popeye?
The Great Gazoo. The geek.
Not,
yeah.
The Great Gazoo
Jeep.
Was in
the Jeep. You're thinking of the Jeep.
Jeep, yeah. Beep, beep, Jeep, I'm
Jeep,
sorry.
Jeep,
yeah.
Jeep.
And that was a magical character out of Popeye, the Jeep.
Oh,
yeah.
I love the Jeep. He would pop in and out when he felt like it.
Yeah. But there was a cartoon on Cartoon Saturday. There was the new Schmoo. And I thought that
yeah.
somehow came out of Fred Flintstone.
I think it did.
Or it was tied to
it. It was odd. Like, what the hell is this?
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, well, if Laverne and Shirley can have a cartoon, they can make a Schmoo, I guess. I don't know.
I guess.
Yeah.
They're very schmooish.
Yeah.
But you don't have to be. But you don't have to be schmooze. Schmooze.
No.
Yeah.
It helps. It couldn't hide. It couldn't hide.
Couldn't hide.
Hoy vey. He's a schmoo over there. What are you talking about? Anything.
I had really bad dreams. We were doing dreams on our shows, and I used to have really bad ones when I was first adopted. Oh yeah, screaming dreams.
The trials and tribulations of abuse or what?
I don't know what it meant. I blocked
you
it out.
You woke up screaming.
Yeah, I would
blocked
wake up screaming.
Out.
Shortly after I was adopted,
okay.
For a while it went away, but. A while where it's like,
you gotta give up those. You gotta give up those midnight kielbasis. That's what it was.
I think one night I woke up screaming, "The orange juice is leaking." I guess that was a horrible thing for the orange juice to be
well,
leaking.
Only if you had to clean it up.
So if you're a psychiatrist and you're listening, I will accept your free examination for.
I don't know why I went there, but. But that was like a fallacy of understanding. What if a woman drank orange juice and then instead of milk, you know, orange juice came out? Mm, yeah, I don't know.
What?
Like a breastfeeding mother, if she drank orange juice instead of milk, it'd be orange juice.
I thought this was some weird joke. I didn't know where it was going. I'm like, whoa.
It didn't
have a punchline.
It's just weird.
It was just bizarre.
It's just weird.
It
just, it's just weird.
I was hovering over the mute button. I was hovering over it.
For me? yeah.
Sometimes
I
you can make the joke
know.
Without making the joke.
I get, yeah. The dreams that I had that freaked me out. One was I had just newly moved into my new home with my dad and my stepmom, and I had my own room, and I was an only child, and I had moved from having siblings to being an only child. I'm asleep, and one of the dreams was outside of the window that was in this room was a courtyard. And it was all in a hue of green. Everything was green, the sky, and there were these little, you know, 3-4 foot alien beings walking around and stuff. And I was like, that was a continuing nightmare I had over and over. It freaked me out. So they were right outside my window.
Dave, do you want to join in on the self-analysis here?
Here's the thing. I very seldom ever remember my dreams.
Remember? Okay.
Yeah. So that would mean I really didn't have usually the nightmare type thing.
That's good.
Sorry,
over time, I kid you not, as a little kid, you know, I got tired of these nightmares, and I just told myself, well, think of it this way. Free movie.
Free movie. There you go.
Free movie.
Some people write down their dreams, like they have a notebook by the bed. They write, I don't know why you would do that, but
yeah,
know.
I'm not leaving no evidence. I'll tell you that.
another UFO related one I had was several years before I had moved in with my I was living with different family, and I was outside in the yard and these big ships, it was like a Jack Kirby drawn spaceships, were like 50 feet in the air hovering above and moving over like an armada. And
ooh,
and it was like,
cool.
You can't get away from them there, you know, and I don't remember, it was like, look, again, and that reoccurred. I would have those two different UFO dreams. I don't know what that was about.
Mm. Mm.
Crazy stuff.
I don't know, but there's, like I said, after a point, I said, I'm going to have fun with this and think of it as a free movie. I would start to look forward to them, and I would stop having them, of course, despite myself.
Yeah.
So
I know I've had several very positive dreams of me and my dogs that I used to have.
That's good.
We're taking a walk or something, you know, or just, you know, hanging out in the backyard, whatever we're doing. And they're pleasant. They're good. You know, wake up and go, darn, why did I have to wake up? That was great. Because you wake up and they're gone, and you're like, well, heck, you know. It's like, no. I really wish dogs had more longevity than just a decade or so.
It would be great.
Yeah.
It would.
It would be great they're great people.
Mm-hmm, they are. And the only drawback right now would be if I get one, I have to make sure you have to arrange that in the event of your death, you know, that Mr.
Yeah.
or Mrs. Doggy has some place to go. Someone's going to take care of her. You know, it's not just going to go to the pound.
Yeah. We're picking that out for our furry kids right now.
I'm going to have to go meet people just to bequeath my animals to them.
I'm more worried about the odd animals. Like, I don't think cat and dog is any problem with our kids. I'm sure they take them in with open arms, but mm-hmm. like turtles and the buzzard, I mean the parrot and the fish, not everybody wants to deal with that. So.
Mm.
And Speedy, that turtle might outlive us all. We've had him 20-some years. Found him when he was the size of one of those old dime store turtles you'd get at Woolworths.
How big is he now?
He's regular full-size turtle for like a painted turtle, a little on the chubby side. The wife does it. She makes everything besides, not just me, chubby. Not just me.
Okay.
So he's a little porker. You can tell his shell's like stretched a little. But, and then and he is not chubby, a box turtle, kind of box turtle, though, like. A Western.
Now, the 12-year-old turtle, is that the elder turtle you have? Is that a confined animal, or does it walk around the house or in the backyard?
No. He has a tank. He has a tank.
Oh, is he like 12 inches in diameter or?
He's not round. He's an oblong, and at his longest spot on the ellipse, I would say he's close to 12 inches. Yeah.
Yeah. But he's not a land turtle. He's more of a water turtle or what?
He is a water turtle. Painted turtles are generally water turtles. So his tank has water, but he has rocks to climb up on because he does like to come up and sun himself. He's got a heat lamp and stuff.
Right.
Um,
but he never comes out of the tank. You never spend.
Oh yeah, in the summer we let
him
run around the yard. That's hence the name Speedy.
Wow.
He tries. It's hilarious. He takes off like I'm free at last after all these years. No, you're not.
Uh-huh.
But we keep a close eye on him because of the other wildlife around here. No, we don't want nothing to happen to the old guy.
Right. Oh, I can't. Yeah, I saw some disturbing information about.
But I have heard of
alligators
keeping them
and
up
turtles.
To 35 years in captivity. So I'm at the point where, well, what if?
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. You need to find a godfather for your turtle.
Well, and I mean he's a reptile, but I think it would be just a shame to have somebody turn him loose just because we croaked, you know.
Right. Would he have the instincts? You would think it would be natural, but has he lost
the instincts?
For a reptile,
you would think, but maybe not. You know, he's pampered. He's a spoiled-ass turtle.
Yeah.
Like
I mean, he's not having to search for his food as much as a natural turtle would.
He's a lazy bum.
Is he hand trained so he doesn't snap at fingers or?
No, he's not. He's pretty much on the wild side, but you can easily grab them from behind, like around the shell from behind, and their neck only goes so far. So,
right,
you can tote them around with nobody getting hurt, including him.
Yeah, I ran across a soft shelled snapper trying to cross a busy road, and I stopped and I got out and I picked it up and walked it to the way over to a body of water and let it go without getting snapped. But yeah, it was a crazy looking turtle.
Yeah.
No,
I've seen people drag them by their tails. Cause that way you're definitely not going to get bit. Yeah. You drag them by the tail,
but you could damage the animal with that.
Or the back feet, then whatever. Just, you don't want them. Those things can put a biting on you.
They can, but you can, you know, harness the turtle shell, even if it's soft, and you're not going to damage the animal. I'd be concerned that you'd hurt an appendage or a tail or whatever, you know. That's real animal there that they're, I don't know.
And by dragon, I mean along grasses, not along the road. You wouldn't see that to an animal.
You're still putting quite a bit of torque on that little leg or tail or whatever.
Yeah. Well, if it's me or him, it's going to be him.
Uh-huh. Right.
But I don't want to force the situation. If I could just walk away, all the better for both of us.
Right. Well, I was just helping out where I could, make sure he didn't get smashed. Because it was, a busy road.
Sometimes I do dumb stuff, though. We had a water snake. I tried catching him, but he just was in too bad of a mood, so I didn't want to hurt him. And I said, all right, you go your way, I'll go mine.
I just wanted to
hold him for a minute, but he wasn't having it.
Yeah. As a child, I had a snake, and it was a hand. You could handle it, and you know, it was okay. It was, it was cool.
Well, I probably had a dozen garter snakes at one time or another.
Yeah. Yeah. And I remember, for some reason, I want to say it was a moose, but it probably wasn't a moose. It was like a deer head and on the wall, and they would take the snake and put it up there on the antlers.
Cool.
And, I think that was when I met him. Like, that's your snake. And I was like, what? And
it's a good place to keep an iguana. They like high places. So do snakes. They feel safe.
Right.
I haven't
had the iguana freeze this year that I know about.
Yeah. We had a couple of pets at our old house. Zombies
and iguanas.
Yes. Green iguanas.
Iguanas.
They got almost 4 feet long.
Yeah,
the
ones I've seen, they
can grow.
Yeah, no, the iguanas I saw, they were healthy. They were big. Here in Florida.
Oh, yeah, in the wild, they get up there.
That was kind of crazy about the this woman was never on my radar, this Judy Canova. And she was born like 30 minutes from where I live. I bought a car in the city she was born in.
Oh, good.
Yeah, the car I drove, I purchased it in Stark, Florida. Starke, Stark. And that's where she was born. That's crazy. I never heard of her before. We've never had her on Erie House before that I know about.
Have we,
Dave? Is Dave here? Hello, Dave.
Yes, we did have her. We did have her on some clips, but never one of her shows. This was the first time for her show.
First time for her show. And I have some vinyl of the best of Judy Canova radio shows, And a lot of Mel Blanc in there as well.
Yeah.
He even did his Yosemite Sam character in there. It wasn't Yosemite Sam, but he, you know, it was what
that kind of a voice, yeah.
Sam. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Rickin', snickin', yeah.
Goldern.
Yeah,
darn. Goldern. You ornery varmint. That guy.
I hate rabbits.
I hate rabbits.
The only thing I
hate
more than a rabbit is two rabbits. I believe
it's the one. The one that tells me is Yosemite Sam is dressed up as an Arab, and he's like, Whoa, Campbell! And they hit him with a rifle.
I said whoa!
I said whoa! Yeah, I reveled in the Looney Tunes Saturday morning offerings of the cartoons with Mel Blanc doing all that stuff. Oh, my God.
The good. The Bugs Bunny Roadrunner Hour, which was the most violent hour on television.
And what
rehearsing, and there's no parts. We know
every part by heart.
So, and essentially, that was basically a showcase of all the talent of Mel Brooks. I don't know how many different.
Mel Blanc.
I don't know
Not
if there
Mel
were,
Brooks.
Mel Blanc. Yeah. Who did I say? Mel Brooks?
Yeah,
I'm sorry.
Yeah. Same guy.
But speaking of Mel Brooks, his History of the World Part 2 comes out in March.
No way.
Right. Can you believe it? This guy is, I don't even know how old this guy is.
Well, it would be Part
1.
The first
stuff.
One was Part 2.
No, this
yeah,
was, that
exactly.
was Part 1.
Yeah, this is,
that was Part 1.
Was
yeah.
it? Oh, it was Part 1?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
What a
this
way.
Is part
so,
two.
Who knows what's going to go on? I'm sure it's, Mel has said that a lot of the content of his films couldn't be created today in today's environment.
But and Mel was directly involved in this as well.
Wow, that's Sweet. Cool.
God bless
wasn't
him.
A,
yeah,
a,
at his age, that's amazing.
Yeah, it wasn't he wasn't the whole shaboom like he was in his other ones, but he had a good voice in it. So I'm looking forward to it.
There is on the YouTubes an interview of Mel Brooks sitting down with his granddaughter. And his granddaughter's interviewing him. Very interesting. Very, very fun. She's also has interest in going into filmmaking, I believe.
If you go into the encyclopedia and look up Comic Genius, you will see a picture of Mel Brooks.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
Or if not, you should, because the guy just blows me away with his... And the fact that he's
right.
really into musicals. He did the musical segments of the first History of the World movie.
Right.
He turned Young Frankenstein into a musical.
Yeah, Young Frankenstein and the producers into a full-blown musical. And it's just almost every movie did had one musical number.
And he writes a lot of that. He writes a lot of that.
Yeah, and he started off as a drummer. Started off as a drummer.
Inquisition, what a show.
Oh, my gosh, yeah.
I have his biography, Mel Brooks, and...
Oh, I should get that.
Some
yeah.
amazing, amazing experiences this guy had.
Yeah.
Dave, do you have the Stan Freberg autobiography? It only hurts when I laugh.
I do. Yeah, I do. And
ooh, that's
because of that direct, you know, and it's directly because of that book that came out. Rhino Records saw that he had finished the United States of America Volume 1, but he got so mad at that Broadway producer. And what it was is they were doing they were fighting, bumping heads the entire thing. This David, I forget what his last name was, but he was the guy that bumped heads with everybody. And he was doing the scene on Lincoln. And the guy said, hold it. Lincoln has to go. He says, this is the Civil War. And the guy explained to him why Lincoln didn't belong in the Civil War. And the way he explained it, Stan said, it made sense. Anyway, he took the script, took it home, threw it in the bottom drawer of his desk, and it was and didn't touch it again until Rhino Records executives saw that and said, "Pull it out. We're producing it." Yeah.
See, this is crazy. One guy essentially destroyed Freebird with this play. There was so much material that Freebird could have been doing, you know, even more amazing stuff, and we never were able to see it. And one guy just sat there and tied him down and bound his hands, and it was horrible.
Yeah. Because he was going to do the comedy album and says, no, we need to do it as an original soundtrack. He says, original cast album. He says, okay. And so he talked him out of doing a lot of things. So, yeah, you're right, Gar. I think that's why he resorted back to commercials so much, because nobody could tell him what to do when he did his commercials.
Right. But he could have been doing more commercials had he not been hemmed down by this guy. He could have done more sitcoms. He could have done more, you know, who knows what. If he hadn't been hemmed down by this guy. One of my artistic heroes is Caravaggio, I believe Italian Renaissance artist, and he was hemmed down, but he shrugged off the shackles of those that controlled art and said, I'm gonna do it the way I want to do it. And they said, well, we don't like your disposition, but we really like your art, so go ahead.
Yeah, I believe it was David Merrick was the Broadway producer that really screwed things over.
Merrick.
Yeah.
Merrick. Yeah, I believe it was David Merrick.
If you want a really interesting read, that Stan Freberg, It Only Hurts When I Laugh book, Dale, is very entertaining.
That sounds like a
but
good
it also,
read.
Might,
it does.
It also might make you frustrated if you put yourself into the boots of Stan Freberg.
Oh, I'm sure.
He was, you know, he had enough of his own freedom to do what he wanted. If you go on the YouTubes there, he did a thing for PBS on the economy that during the Reagan administration on economics, a whole big, it was like an hour show or so on economics. It was pretty cool. Pretty cool.
Oh, there was something funny about he got bumped off of Dick Cavett.
Oh, really?
He kept showing up for, he was booked and he kept showing up for Dick Cavett and they kept bumping him. And he was
That means the first guest would take too long to jabber. That's what it was.
Yeah, something. And so he ended up, he was in the studio audience, and he was seated. And I think John Lennon was the guest speaker. And all of a sudden, Dick Cavett said, "Oh, and there's Mr. Freberg." And they mic'd him, and he was, like, talking from the audience. It was very funny. Very, very interesting.
I'll have to check that out.
It's a hoot, and I might be incorrect about some of that, but I know that he got bumped on Dick Cavett, and he became vocal about it. It might have been after he actually did get booked, and it was just really funny. He's one of those people that's intellectually very, very competent, and yet has a sardonic wit. George Carlin had that. Dennis Miller had that. Dennis Miller confused the heck out of me, but I enjoyed it. It's fun to run across those that are intellectually powered, as well as having a good comedic timing and wit to have fun.
What's his name? He does those Garden songs. Yeah, well, him too, but. Him too. No. What's his name? Come on, he did. I'm getting old.
Tom Lehrer.
Thank you.
Tom Lehrer.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, Tom Lehrer. Oh my gosh.
He's another genius.
Oh. Yeah, and the guy on PBS that played piano with the red, white, and blue piano.
Mark Russell. Mark Russell.
Yes. Oh.
Even Stephen Wright had kind of a cerebral edge to his humor.
Oh my gosh, yes, Stephen, wow.
As did Henry Morgan.
Yes.
Yeah.
Just yeah.
And in their own zany way, you got to throw in the Marx Brothers. I mean, their manipulation of language was just incredible.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Well, if you're going that far, we might as well throw in Homie the Clown.
Oh yeah. If you got the sock, you got it made. Homie ain't playing that.
Yeah.
I wanted to do that for Halloween as a DJ, dress up like Homie the Clown. When they come up with a request, Homie, don't play that.
Whack people.
Yeah.
Today it would be called assault.
Yes. With a deadly sock.
Yeah.
Well, gentlemen, I'm running out of steam. Big time. This is late night.
I'll plug that iron.
Go turn on that stove, that electric gas stove of yours, yeah.
Yes.
And everything will be fine.
What's up with the gas stove?
I'm going to defend it with my life.
Before we sign up, just really quick, what is people's problem with a gas stove?
There's rumors
they're becoming an endangered species or something. I don't know.
Well, what it is they're actually, after all these years, saying – there are fumes, and like you said, if it's vented properly, it's not an issue.
Yeah, you have
but everybody's kitchen is not vented properly, so as a result, it can throw out some gases.
I don't think mine is vented properly. Does that explain a lot?
That does explain some things. Yeah.
See, in this society, you don't damn the equipment. You get litigious and you sue your building contractor.
Yes,
yeah,
of course.
Right. And that's why a lot of them had those. And that's why a lot of those had those little fans above their gas stove, and it would suck
it's
up that
yeah,
and
exhaust
go through
hood,
the filter
actually.
And all was well.
Hood,
and,
fan, yeah.
Yeah, and they got rid of and that helped eliminate it, but. Nobody puts those in anymore because they don't look cool, you know?
We live in a litigious
what?
Society, too,
okay.
Where it used to be caveat emptor, right? Let the buyer beware.
Yeah, right.
Now you got to put a sticker on a damn cigarette lighter that probably costs another $1 to produce, which has all this language in it, probably about 150 words, which when condensed say, fire hot.
yeah. Coffee hot. Don't put it in your lap. Don't freaking idiot.
When you have to put a sign in the restroom that says please wash your hands before returning to the kitchen.
Yeah,
I worry about the next generation. I really do.
I worked in restaurant service in the 70s, 80s, and 5,628 jobs. They had those signs. Wash your hands. It wasn't in big, bold letters. It was a little bit smaller. Now it's larger. Now it takes on the entire wall.
I think it's there not necessarily for the workers, but for the people to see, oh, yes, they're washing their hands.
Now, see, I interpret it different. I go, my God, they must have hired some idiots. They have to put this sign in here.
No.
I've worked in a bunch of restaurants. There are idiots back there. But no, as a manager, I did that once. I was a restaurant assistant manager. If you have any questions, you're like, did you wash your hands? You know, yes or no. And if not, there's the soap. Have fun. But for the most part, you shouldn't have to oversee that. But with restaurant, with the handling of food, it's like if you've ever run across rabbinically supervised circumstances, man, they are all about making sure stuff is sanitary.
Good. They should.
Yeah. And with that, bring in Jimmy Durante. Let's get out of here.
Yeah. Let's turn off the house lights. Turn on the three spotlights. Then comes the schnapps.
All right. Good night, guys.
Good night.
All right. Cool. Good
night. Goat, please. Good
night. What for this sake? But good night.
What? No goat?
We had a few laughs. And it's time for toodaloo. Aribo, up we the same, and Inka-tinka-doo.
Hilly day.
Good night.
good night, folks. And good
you
night.
You said good night.
Mrs. Calabash. Well,
good night already.
Yes.
Bye-bye.